All right. Hey, welcome to episode 36 of the Perigee Podcast. I'm your host, Chief Mass Sergeant of the Space Force, John B9 Bentivania, and I'm coming to you live from the Air and Space Forces Association Warfare Symposium in Aurora, Colorado. Joining me today are the recipients of the 2024 Polaris Awards. So we're going to start out with some introductions. So I'm going to ask each of you to maybe introduce yourself and let us know what award you would be recognized with. And if I could, in a few quick words, what does that mean to you? So we're going to start with Sergeant Drummond over here, and we're just going to go around the table. So you're up first. You're going to set the stage.
Oh, hey. Thanks, thanks, sir. So I'm Technical Sergeant Drummond from the 3rd Operations Squadron at Schriever Space Force Base, Colorado. I'm the recipient of the Character Award. To me, that just means someone that does their job and does it wholeheartedly without, really letting things get in the way.
All right. Thanks for joining us, man. And congratulations.
Thank you, sir.
You're up.
Hello, my name is Technical Sergeant Jacqueline Kidd, and I'm recognized for the Connection Polaris Award. And honestly, it feels kind of surreal because when I'm tasked to do something, I just do my best. And I, at the time, you don't realize the impacts that you make, but reflecting back over the past year, all the dots have connected for me. And so having this award, it really just shows like the opportunities that we have to make a difference. And I just appreciate it. I'm glad to be here.
All right. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
All right. Good afternoon. I'm Mass Sergeant Evans. I am the detachment chief for 664 Cyber Squadron. It's one of the squadrons within the NRO. And I am the recipient of the Commitment Award. And to me, commitment was about bettering yourself in support of the mission, as well as bettering the team and making effective use of your team. But again, all in pursuit of accomplishing the mission.
All right, thanks a lot.
Good afternoon, everybody. Captain Bach. I am the Courage Award winner for this year's Polaris. Magical things. I think courage as a officer kind of like stems to being able to digest other people's information and kind of stand up for our people. How we're like unwavering to make sure that our people are highlighted, treated right, and make sure that we can push forward as a team to accomplish the mission.
Thanks, sir.
Hello, everyone. Senior Master Sergeant Brianna Fields. I am the Vice Commandant at the Vostler Academy, and the Vostler Academy was recognized as the team winner for the Polaris Award. What this award means to me, I think, is I get to see the amazing team every day. And so just getting everybody else to recognize the incredible work that all of the cadre at Vostler is doing has been very, very rewarding.
All right.
And I'm Master Sergeant Dalton Granger. I am the Director of Operations at the Vostler Academy as well. As far as what this award means, it gives an opportunity to lift up the cadre for their Herculean effort that they took part in setting up these two additional EPME courses. And really a quote from Nick Sirianni from the Super Bowl champion Philadelphia Eagles really sums it up really well. You can't be great without the greatness of others. So that's kind of what this award means to me. Go Birds.
Yeah. So, all the Kansas City fans just stopped. they just shut up the podcast. That's right. Send any letters to the editor. Hey, thanks a lot. I just realized, I don't know if we planned it that way, but we did the values in order.
We did this time.
Yeah. Yeah. That was good. Did you purposely do that, or is that just how you... Nope. Do you walk down the hallway now in this order?
In step two.
Recognition, right? And I think we all kind of use that word. I think as a service culturally, especially when it comes to Polaris, we haven't used the word winner. You might be able to say recipient. Because you embody, you represent, right, the values. Whether individually or collectively as a team across the service. And so I say that because, as we have tried to, Like, what is it as Guardians and as a Space Force when it comes to recognition and the awards programs? Like, who do we want to be? What did we want to do? You know, and I had put out, you know, a message, you know, not too long ago to the Force, a beeline where I talked about kind of recognition and kind of what that looks like. So now that you've kind of, you know, gone through this and you're all, you know, leaders in your own right, supervisors, I'm just kind of curious, you know, as a service, are we on the right track when we talk about, you know, whether it be recognizing individuals through, you know, because they're, you know, emulating the values in which we hold so dear, you know, they're just, you know, being great warfighters, doing great work. They're just, you know, great guardians. You know, from your vantage point, when it comes to recognition and awards programs, I'm just curious on your thoughts. How are we doing are we on the right path? Do we still have some discussion or some decisions to make? So I'll just throw it out there to the group.
So I think, first of all, I love the simplicity of it. I think it makes it so much easier for folks to be competitive and really show up in who they are as a guardian and as a human. It doesn't require them to do necessarily anything outside of what we need from them as a guardian. It embodies everything that we just need them to show up every day, being a good human and being a good guardian.
Anybody else?
Yeah, I think just first of all, the Polaris Award in general, you know, it helps us establish an identity, like that is our award as a service. And so I think it establishes like short-term goals for our members, sometimes career goals, depending on, you know, how long the member's going to be in. But I think it really helps in the end produce job satisfaction, because a lot of the people in the Space Force, they don't get to see what they're working with necessarily. They don't get that direct feedback from anything. And so working towards those awards might be a way to get them some, you know, direct feedback or some job satisfaction and, you know, more or less a reward for the hard work that they're doing.
So, Master Evan, so at the 664, you know, from the teams that you lead as a team leader, what are some things when you want to kind of recognize or sort of appreciation for your teammates? What's your philosophy? How do you kind of go about doing it?
So the way I do it is, so first I get to know my team, right? And in my team's specific case, they value their time. And so I use that to kind of help motivate them, give them time whenever I can reasonably do so, mission allowing and all that stuff. But also taking the time just to say thank you. Anytime they're doing good work, because they do good work all the time, these guys are always busting their tails, getting the mission done. They just like that constant, not necessarily constant, but they like to be reminded that, hey, you guys are doing a good job. Because in cyber right now, in the Space Force, it can be a frustrating environment, just because they don't necessarily have the capabilities they need to do their job all the way. And I know that's going to resonate with any other cyber guardian, perhaps other functional areas too. So just making sure to take the time to recognize, like, hey, I know that things are kind of hard right now. We're building mission. And it involves a lot of work that's not necessarily fun for them and doesn't necessarily give them the job satisfaction, but take the time to reemphasize to them, hey, this is the vision for where we're going, and then just making sure to thank them for everything they're doing in support of that mission.
Yeah, you know, it was great yesterday, you know, when we had a chance to recognize all of you here at AFA, and you got the really cool medallions, you know, which I'm surprised you're not wearing right now, because I thought, you know, that was really cool. But then the actual trophy itself, and, you know, just getting up on stage and coming here to hang out. I mean, that's all phenomenal, right? When you think about you are a representation of the, you know, almost 16,000, you know, men and women that are in the Space Force, is significant. But to your point, right, I think there's, you know, that it doesn't have to be this, you know, large grand of a thing when you want to say, tell somebody, hey, you're doing a great job and I appreciate you. And to your point, right, time, man, time is valuable to all of us. And sometimes little gestures of, hey, just doing a great job, or try to give them some time back for the hard work they're doing, I think also can be very meaningful. And the other thing, you know, And again, right, if you think that I'm wrong on this, this is what this whole conversation is about. But it, when you thank somebody and show appreciation, you're not limited, right? Like, you, it's not just, well, we can only recognize one person this quarter or one person this year. Now through, right, you know, certain types of things like the Polaris Award. But man, as leaders, there's so many ways that we can do that. And it was a kind of discussion about let's not limit ourselves to formal necessarily processes and programs, because you all have amazing people working for you, and we shouldn't make you to say through recognition you're only allowed to do a certain percentage. You should have the flexibility to do that. It's a way it's meaningful to them, and do it as often and as to as many people. Right? You know, obviously, you don't want to lose value in it, but it's trying to build a culture like that. And that was kind of what the beeline was about when we had put it out. But, you know, the culture and the service as we're doing this is really important as we go forward. But I really appreciate, you being here and the things that you're doing for the service and for the men and women, you know, that you lead. And I hope when you do go back, you know, you get a chance to, you know, your experience the last couple of days, you know, coming to AFA, getting a chance to kind of engage. I know you spent some time, you know, got a chance to see General Saltzman, some other senior leaders, the secretary yesterday. But I really do appreciate it. And you're just, like I said, you're a representation, right, of your teammates that, like you said, right, kind of help you get here. And many of you brought family members too, which is great. And I got a chance to meet some of them, but hopefully this evening or tomorrow I get a chance to say hello and meet your family and see the real power, right, behind the guardians that are sitting here right now, because we all know family gets us here. So I wanted to ask, Sergeant Drummond, Orbital Engagement Qualification Course. You know, we've talked about, man, the type of training that we need to get guardians, especially in the evolving mission sets that we have. So I wanted to kind of get from your perspective, you did a lot of work kind of establishing some of that and kind of creating it. What have you seen? First of all, how hard was it to get it done? And have you started to see the benefit from it?
So, I mean, I can't personally take credit for the entire course, right? So I have a whole team of instructors and people that support us in some way, shape or fashion. And basically the course took years of development, and then that material was then further refined, and then, you know, it's been developed into a very formidable course now. And we actually had our first graduates a couple of months ago. General Miller actually came out to the graduation of that, and I would say, you know, my instructors are the key to that course. It wasn't necessarily anything I can take credit for. I just kind of audit things, make sure they're professional, make sure they're in tune with where we want to be as a warfighting force in the future. But, you know, I was that facilitator there taking care of those people and making sure they had the tools, the resources they need to get it done. But, you know, by all means, there's a Captain Getty in 3SOPS. He's been instrumental in that course. Lieutenant Revis as well. I have a Tech Sergeant Witt and a Staff Sergeant Brewington or Sergeant Brewington, and they're the superstars for that course. And like I said, I'm just there to support them, make sure the course stays on track, and make sure that we can generate, war fighters that can get the job done if it ever needs done.
Yeah, I appreciate that. You know, I think all of you had a chance to kind of sit through and listen to General Saltzman's keynote speech yesterday. And he's been talking about this for a while, right? The necessity for the service, right, to kind of hone that warrior ethos, and beyond the core functions that we've been doing really good, assured space access and global space operations, right, the PNT and the SATCOM and the missile warning, but that space superiority and what it means to actually dominate and control the domain. And the advanced training that's required to do that. And you talked about on the cyber terrain, right, which underpins all of that. You said, some of the frustration that we don't have all that kit. But I think it was really important yesterday when General Saltzman said, we can't let those things hold us back, right? And this group is an example, right, of using the resources that we have, tapping into our imagination, being innovative to continue to build that foundation and move the service forward is so vitally important. You know, and Sergeant Kidd, right, at the weapons school, I mean, you know, right, how important, you know, all this is. And, you know, foundation, what is being, you know, delivered to Guardians, you know, at the unit level, and then sending them to the, you know, preparing them to compete for and then go to the weapons school. So from your perspective, you know, what are you seeing as far as, you know, students when they come? Is it a you know, a huge, you know, change that things, the culture that you're developing in the weapon school and in the schoolhouse, is it really detached from what's happening within the operational units, or are we better aligned now than maybe where we were a couple of years ago?
I think that's a great question, Chief. I'd like to say that I think we're better aligned now. I haven't been at all the units, so I'm not familiar with all of the tactical units' cultures, but yeah. At the weapons school, we're there to make lethal warfighters, and we teach them how to mission plan and problem solve and lead people of all different ranks, of all different backgrounds. We really focus a lot on integration and how can we contribute to the joint fight, because that's where we need to be. So,
yeah, I think I was impressed. It was a couple of years ago. I went to an operational unit, and they had incorporated debriefs into a lot of things they were doing. And you know, when I was an operator years ago, right, that was a, you know, more of a weapons school, right? Kind of a small group did that, right? But that culture had kind of, you know, propagated, right? Because that mentality, right, was expected out of, you know, all Guardians. And I said, man, we're on the right path. Like, this is exactly the direction that we have to go. You know, so you've got the training, you've got, you know, some of the war ethos, right? Looking at things from a space-minded warfighter perspective. But then you need the TTPs, right? To be able to, what's the approach that we take? So sir, I mean, you know, one of the things that you've really been working on is you know, generating the TTPs that we're, you know, executing from the domain, and we're giving operators. So from your vantage point, how are we doing on that?
As we develop as a new service, I think it is really important to understand where we fit in the fight. And I think as a new service, we've been trying to find the identity. We have a lot of great Guardians doing great work with different weapon systems, trying to understand how we take this benign environment and push it towards the warfighting environment. I mean, weapons school is a great example of them trying to push like the red flag exercise out to not just core weapons school graduates, but pushing that out to different deltas and spread that love and spread that knowledge gap. Close that knowledge gap. Yeah. I think has been like a really amazing thing to see. I was fortunate enough to deploy within a joint environment and saw the need we have for space, regardless if it's from missile warning to PNT, to just having members to help educate other services on what like space is needed. So to answer your question directly, is our tactics being developed? I think it is. Is it being developed at the right speed? I'm not sure. Is it going somewhere? I'm not sure, but it's being worked on by probably one of the brightest like space minds that we can probably find in this country.
Yeah, every time I get a chance to go out, I was at Space Flag a couple months ago and getting a chance, you know, I was at the 392nd, I think the CTS, and I'm getting the brief. And I think I talked about this on stage a couple months ago, but like the battle lab director was a sergeant. And then space flag director was a tech sergeant. And I'm like, man, this is just, you know, it's amazing to see that bench of space warfighters, you know, is continuing to grow. You know, whether you're wearing stripes or whether you're wearing bars, we're getting after it as a service. And it's just so inspiring to me to get a chance to kind of see that. And we got to continue that, right, that culture, that path as where we're going. You know, and a lot of its concept, right? When we talk about warfighting and what does it mean? How do you attack, you know, problem sets? How do you think critically? How do you leverage teamwork to get after it? Has been a big part of what Vossler has done with the fellowships, right? So we've done a couple iterations. If you could just remind us, how many of the fellowships, 1, 2, and 3, are kind of where are we with that right now?
We've done one fellowship 1. We're on our 4th fellowship 2. and getting ready to execute our third Fellowship 3.
And so most of the feedback that I've been getting has been pretty positive, but, you know, I don't know if I'm always getting the right. I hope people are pretty honest with me when I get yelled at enough by people in the hallways. But, you know, from the cadre, and I know we had, at one time we were calling everybody facilitators. I think we're back to instructors. But from the faculty, what's the feedback that you're getting from the fellows as they go through?
So I think overwhelmingly it is very positive. I think it's a huge mindset shift that people are having to go through. Especially in this cohort, people were saying that like they're motivated by grades and awards and stuff like that. And
They are motivated by that.
They are. Oh, okay. And we have no tests, we have no grades, we have no awards. But by the end of them, they're usually saying, no, I'm really grateful that we don't have that because it allowed some true, authentic, hard conversations. I think the best thing, though, is any feedback that we are getting, we're able to iterate it immediately after. So we do that debrief process and change immediately after a cohort goes through. So as long as the feedback makes sense and is viable, and we get some wild feedback in there, yeah, for sure. But as long as it makes sense, we try and incorporate it in just to get guardians the education that they need when they need it.
And Chief, there are always outliers, but the trend analysis that we've done after each cohort has shown that it's generally positive and people have really enjoyed the new structure we've created.
Yeah. I'm excited about, I think the initial Fellowship 1 was obviously successful, was the beta. Similar feedback from the specialists that went through?
Yes. I think it did make us realize, though, their feedback was that the specialists and the sergeants that are going through are some of the smartest people in the service. Yeah. And so when we're baselining our PME and we're starting from the very first level, we have to make that harder than probably a lot of what the Fellowship 3 material is. The war games have to be harder, yeah, and more challenging. And so that was very, very eye-opening to us, but overall very good feedback. And I'm excited to see where it goes this next iteration.
Yeah, you know, that's one of the things that, you know, as we've been talking about the development path for the enlisted force specifically, you know, because I think on the OTC path and you know, there's been some movement on how we're developing officers. You know, you got Johns Hopkins, you know, for their PME, and then the OTC course for technical training. So now looking at that model, or looking what you know we learned from that endeavor, now we're focused on how are we going to do it for the enlisted. In several of the conversations I've had about, man, we've got to make it probably harder than a lot of us experience. And I was joking the other day, I think if I tried to join a Space Force today, I don't know if I'd make it, right? Because the competition is so fierce and the talent is so immense. I just don't think I'd be able to make it in. So I fall into grandfather rule. So I mean, you can't get rid of me. But part of it too, you know, you talked about the, you know, what first motivated was the awards and, you know, was I top of my class? And I'm glad right at the end, because I think that's maybe a culture we want to, right, holistically, you know, what are the things that motivate us, right, as guardians in the service? But in and of itself, whether it be basic military training, tech school, PME, they should be hard. Because, like, when you're inducted into the fellowship, it shouldn't mean something. Like, you weren't able just to skate through. Like, you had to work with your team to be inducted into the fellowship. When you graduate the weapons school, right, and you get your patch, like, that's got to mean something because you worked hard to do it. Like, none of these things we want to make, give it away, right? We wanted to make it significant. And then the pride in it.
Sir, so I do have a hard question for you. So as we are developing our enlisted like leaders, yeah, right, and members through some like patch is like a new enlisted position, pushing them through some of these harder courses as PME, what is higher leadership plan to compensate for that? Obviously, we can talk about wars and different things, but we see the pay structure gap between enlisted and officers. And we see sometimes like enlisted are doing more work than officers, right? So when I have enlisted members sitting next to us and they're questioning, man, like, we're pressing the 7 buttons.
Yeah.
but like I'm struggling to buy formula milk for my child. Like, what are some of the methods that you guys are trying to like push for some of these like gaps to be like squeezed a little bit?
Yeah, absolutely. And thanks for the question, sir. So I think that, you know, as in general about officers enlisted doing the same work, as you know, right, with the officer enlisted civilian roles and responsibilities, we kind of outline what that vision is. And it's going to take time for us to kind of get through it. So I think you're going to see less of that overlap as we're able to fill the operational positions at the tactical, the combat squadrons, the combat detachments, and some of the unit level activities with our NCOs and senior NCOs, and then unleash, right, the senior captains and the majors to go off to the service components, right, to go off to the joint staff, where they're going to do that mission planning and integration, which is where, as a service, we need them to get after. So some of the same work will start to split off as we were able to move the billets around and produce OTC graduates. Now, to your point, you know, and I have testified to Congress on this, you know, on a pay scale perspective, on the enlisted pay scale, it's a DoD-wide pay scale, you know, and as the smallest service, you know, with only three specialties, we're just a very unique service. So from the compensation specifically perspective, you know, we've worked really hard to maximize the authorities we have as a service with reenlistment bonuses, special duty pays, assignment incentive pays, to kind of compensate and or recognize the certifications and the hard work that our enlisted guardians are doing. Now, does that mean it's going to make up for the, you know, the pay gap and pay difference? No, it's not. But they're also very unique, separate responsibilities. You know, I had a chance earlier to talk to some of the cadets that are here from ROTC. And I said to them, I said, I sit here before you as a Chief Master on the Space Force, 31 years. And I've had a chance to be on a command team in all different echelons and seen all different things. But the one thing I've never felt, the one thing I'll never do, was to deal with the burden of command. Right? That's our commissioned officers deal with the burden of command. Now, as a teammate, I help carry that. But at the end of the day, right, you may be hitting the same buttons at some point. But, sir, as you know, there are distinct different expectations, authorities, and responsibilities that you will have that even your sharpest tech sergeant or mass sergeant will never. So there's a little bit of deviation, you know, there. But we are working hard to figure out, you know, how do we appropriately leverage special duty pay, assignment incentive pay, and reenlistment bonuses, right? So that in addition to the overall guardian experience, right, the value that you feel having wearing a uniform and being on a team, that you're not struggling to buy baby formula if you have to, right? No one should have to, serving their nation should have to deal with that. And there's other things that the Department of Defense is hoping to get after to address that. But we are looking at just the immense talent and the responsibilities we're placing on our enlisted force, that how do we compensate them directly? You know, one of the things you've heard me talk about this is, you know, readjusting our promotion system within the Space Force. We've heard the phrase fully qualified promotion. So as an example, sir, if you come into the service and you are combat mission ready, you're certified, whatever the phrase in your particular function is, and you are being presented to the combatant command, you are doing your job, you should be at least an E4. Like, I've seen some phenomenal E2s and E3s that are killing it, and they are warfighters being presented to the combatant commander. I'm like, we got to fix this. Like, you are doing the work, have the responsibility, at least an E4. So we're looking to adjust it where guardians will should be making E4 sooner than in the current promotion model. E5 will still be about the same timeline, but also how do we make promotion E5 more tied to the abilities and the competencies that these E4s are showing and move towards a fully qualified promotion process. So that'll help with some of that too. But those are some of the things, sir, that we're kind of looking at right now. You know, and you know, we had the question about the warrant officers. And, you know, in most of the conversations, you know, when they'd ask about that, why do you think we should have warrant officers? And a lot of times the answer was, hey, I love doing my technical skill craft. Like, I want to continue to do this. I went to school for this. I have a passion for this. I want to maintain, right, this warfighting ethos and do the work. But in our model, when you think about the things that we've talked about, you know, with the combat squadrons, combat detachments, I mean, really, other than some institutional requirements, from E1 through master sergeant, I mean, you're in the thick of it. I mean, you're in combat squadrons, combat detachments, you're doing test, evaluation, you're instructing. I mean, essentially, you are the subject matter expert. So that model of what they're doing is very much aligned to what you would think, you know, that's why we haven't done the leadership technical track, because, you know, all of our NCOs, especially up through master sergeant, we need them, that's the work they're going to be doing. But even our senior mass sergeants and our chiefs, right? Operational relevance is a phrase that we talk about.
Thank you, sir.
But I'm curious, so I threw that out. I mean, any counter stuff to that? That's the kind of philosophy vision we got.
Yes, sir. I think as we are demanding more from enlisted, we are in a unique situation where DOD have a more like unified pay structure for officers and enlisted. But we can't deny the fact that we are demanding more from our enlisted, probably more than other services. So obviously it's a way over my pay grade kind of conversation, but I think those are some of the things that I think about coming from an enlisted family, you know, growing up under an E4 paycheck before. Like, how do we make sure like our enlisted members are taken care of as we're demanding more?
Yeah. Yeah. So I think, so we're, you know, we're in the beginning of March, and I think most of you were, I mean, it doesn't necessarily infect any of us here, but for the men and women that we're, you know, caring about and that we're leading, you know, we're getting that 10% pay raise for the junior enlisted, you know, E4 and below hits on 1 April. So, you know, that was some of the discussions that we had with Congress last year, and Congress enacted that in the 25 NDA. So that'll help as well, sir. But you're absolutely right. And all the services have articulated that the nature of warfare has changed. And what we're asking, I mean, really, the entire, you know, uniform service to do is more than I think we have historically. So it was something that we're trying to address little by little. It's hard to do one big swoop. It's hard to do, but we're getting after it. So, you know, we talked about the warfighting ethos. How are we, from your vantage point, as we say, you know, hey, as guardians, we're warfighters, and that we have a relevant role to play within the joint force. But there's been some discussion and, you know, do we really have a warrior ethos? Like, kind of where are we in that? And General Saltzman talks about it quite a bit. But I was curious, right, like, what are your thoughts on it? When we say warrior ethos, we're warfighters, is it resonating? Are we missing something? Is there more different work we need to do to get after that?
So, Chief, I think in the PME realm, thinking about it, like, both Chief List, the current commandant, and I came from very heavy joint backgrounds. And it's pretty much all I knew before I came over to Vossler. And I think we're getting after it. Chief has a very straight conversation with the fellows before we kick off Warfighting Week to kind of explain some of that and talk people through of, if there's a war and you are fighting it, like, you are a warfighter. And it, regardless of the domain, regardless of, you know, if you're up in space, like, we don't have space gunners, right? So, but we're still fighting that with our assets. And I think it's evolving for sure, and people are getting there. I think integrating it into EPME is critical, and we're doing it at the most junior levels. So we're playing war games, we're teaching them strategy, we're teaching them the joint planning process. And I think it's helping, because for me, I didn't get any of that until I was an E8 and I went to just OFC. And I knew some of it because I had a general interest in it, but I didn't actually understand it from an educational, institutional perspective until then. And that is way too late. Yeah. And so getting after it at the most junior levels, I think is going to help baseline the service a lot better than we have historically in other services.
It also helps to contextualize what being a warfighter actually means. So we do a pretty good job of explaining, you know, if you are a force multiplier for the joint force, then you are in fact a warfighter. It doesn't matter if you're an enabler or in a support role, you are enabling the joint force to be more lethal. And that's what we've actually done our best to impart on the fellows that come through the fellowships.
Yeah. You talk about the joint planning process. You know, we got a lot of discussion, you know, how do we get more joint, right? Or how do we learn joint? And we had a discussion last week with the chiefs on, you know, JPP specifically, you know, that shouldn't be something that we, on the side, have to teach guardians before they go to a joint school. Like, what is our normal process? Like, how do we make decisions within the service? Like, what is the methodology? What is the way that we ask guardians to think through and plan these things? And that should just be second nature to us. So Sergeant Evans, I'm curious from your vantage point, we talk about, you know, JPP and .mil PF and, you know, what are you seeing? How do you lead your teams to attack and plan out things?
So my background, I was in F cyber, so a more mature environment to do defensive cyber operations. So I use my background training and experience from that time to teach my team now. But what I will say is in the Space Force, I have yet to really see that on the cyber side, to be honest with you. I did go through, so I'm a DSHRED, which is the DCO track for cyber. We can go through cyber warfare operations course, but it's held by the Air Force, and the billets on that are pretty limited. Yep. But that course does cover some of it to some extent. It's not great. So what we find, and C3, which is the alternative for it, doesn't cover it at all.
Really?
Okay. So what we are finding right now is that getting into the habits of doing not even necessarily JOP, but just PBET in general, just get them to plan, use a planning methodology such as ME3C, PC squared, which is what the Air Force used. It's not fully ingrained in our training pipeline yet, and it can be a struggle to get them to actually do it. And there's nothing against them. Again, it's just that the training doesn't necessarily exist.
It's about building the culture.
Yeah. Yes, sir. Yeah. So it's on us at our level to make sure that we're mandating that requirement. We're giving them all the things they need in order to do it.
Drummond, what are you saying?
So I think we're not teaching it early enough at this point. We're waiting until someone deploys to provide them with that education that they need, which is unfortunate for that member, because a lot of the decisions they can make in that, you know, sergeant and tech sergeant level, they can make more informed decisions based on the understanding of how we fit into the joint fight and how that hierarchy works. So I just wish it was taught at a little bit lower level, especially when we start moving into these higher promotion rates for our E5s and E6s.
So great news. Actually, in Fellowship 1, we don't teach JOP or SOP, which is the SDP5 version of the JPP process. We do teach OODA loop, which is kind of a great, you know, foundational understanding of planning and understanding decision making and things like that. So we're absolutely getting after that.
You know, it's interesting. We had the chief summit last week. We're down at Lackland. And we got together, and this was a similar conversation that we had amongst the chiefs. And there was some discussion about, you know, some gaps we're seeing in the field on some of these topics. And Chief List was there, and I mean, he almost like jumped out of his seat, right? But in fairness, right, one fellowship one, a couple of fellowship twos, fellowship threes. We need to continue to talk about it, but the service, we haven't been able to propagate enough of these new guardians, I think, into the field to kind of see, it'll take us a little bit of time, right, to see if we're getting it. Just like on the OTC, right? The first, you know, cohort will graduate, I think, later on in the summertime. And we'll learn, like, what is that new warfighter that's being produced through this, and we have to kind of do that assessment to make sure that we're building the right individual, but also understand can't criticize because we just haven't seen the reap the benefits yet. But I think these discussions are really important because it keeps feeding back into the right the men and women who are responsible for doing the training. Oh, yep, got it. We're training that. You're just not going to see it yet for another year or so as I'm pushing talent out to the organizations.
Yeah, and a lot of the concepts that we want to push down to the lower levels because we feel like it's already late to need now, we have to establish that baseline first. And then once we establish that baseline, everyone can be elevated going forward. So we just have to get everybody on the same page and then we can go forward.
I think from like talking about joint integration for space, it's really important to kind of understand what that means. When I came back from deployment, Colonel Grossen says something that kind of took a while for him to digest. And he's like, so deploying with JSOC when I came back, joint planning was the only thing on my mind. Excuse me. And he said, hey, like LT, before you think that far, like you got to understand what space planning is like. So we really try to push for in this current iteration of Space Force of what does our place look like in joint planning, joint war? Yet we are still unsure of what our planning and our procedures look like to execute our like day-to-day operations. So like when I went out, this is when I first learned about SSRs. When I went out, this is my first time understanding some of like the baseline space products we provide for our warfighters in ground. So I was like, didn't really understand it at first. And as I was, you know, learning from my NCOs and my like senior captains, I was like, oh, like I don't know space enough to even consider joint planning yet. So obviously we want to move fast and be able to support our like sister services, yeah. But it's really important us to, as we are walking, like kind of look behind the rearview mirror and understand like what is space we're seeing, what kind of planning methods are we coming up with as a service to make sure that like, oh, I understand what space planning is so I can be effective as a joint planner as well.
Yeah, that's important, right? You can't just, you know, walking down this process. It's not a checklist, right? As we kind of develop, you know, doctrine, concepts, planning process, it's going to take us a while, right, to kind of make sure we're doing the critical thinking to kind of get through it. I think that's really important. But this is why, like I said, these conversations are so important. And not necessarily from me, not from General Salzman, right? These are the things that you all bring back to your organizations. Like, what are you talking about over lunch? You know, what are you talking about, you know, in the break rooms? What are you talking about on the ops floors? What are you talking about in the training rooms? Because you're gonna be the ones that help solve these problems and deliver what we have to get after. This is why I always say I have so much confidence in the future because of conversations like this. So I'll be able to retire, sit on the back porch, and just relax. And I know you're all gonna have to take care.
Oh, sir, you don't look a day over 40. I can't lose you yet.
Yeah, that's why this isn't a video podcast. This is just all right, so well, let's change that up a little bit. I'm gonna ask. All right, what are you watching on TV? You watching anything good? Are you binging anything?
I'll be honest, I don't watch much TV, so occasionally I'll fall asleep with Bob's Burgers on.
Are they still doing it, Bob's Burgers?
They are, sir. They're working on the next season. I think they're on 13.
Yeah, Bob's mustache, man, just freaks me out. I can't do it.
It's the voice. It reminds me so much of Archer. And if you watched Archer and then now you watch Bob's Burgers, it kind of messes with you a little bit.
Oh, my gosh. You know, we were talking early, but you spend a lot of time on your YouTube channel, right?
I do, sir.
Yeah. Tell us a little bit about that. He's famous, you know.
Oh, man.
He has more followers than I do.
Yeah, I mean, it's a car show. I get a lot of like instant gratification fixing things, right? And I like teaching things. I've been an instructor, you know, multiple times throughout my career. So any chance I get to make some sort of how-to guide that's going to live out there on the internet forever, I, you know, take advantage of that opportunity.
How many followers do you have?
I think
don't be afraid to brag, man. It's okay.
I think I just broke 30,000 subs. And then it just grows. To be honest, I haven't had a lot of time for it recently, and it's still growing, so which is crazy to me. But
well, next time my car has issues, you feel free to bring a camera, and you can help me fix it and record it, because I know the help I can get.
Sounds good.
All right, kid. What about you? You watching anything good?
I'm actually very similar to Sergeant Drummond. I don't actually watch very much TV.
Did I get like all the boring people here?
Yeah, I guess so.
We're just busy people.
So you don't watch a lot of shows?
No, sir.
You and your wife just...
Yeah, I'm currently taking a couple classes, and so my free time I do my schoolwork or hang out with my family, hang out with some friends from work.
Where are you going to school? What are you taking?
I'm getting my degree in space policy.
All right. So. All right. How far along are you?
I have about 4 classes left.
All right. You know, have you found it applicable? Like when you think about space policy, right? I mean, that's exactly within our wheelhouse. But have you found it like academically? Is it you can apply it when you come to work of it? Do you see it, the connection?
Some of the things I actually do see the connection on, and other things I think are just a little outdated in the curriculum I'm taking. Yeah. But I enjoy it. I think there's a lot of potential in the future to change policy in a way that we need it to be changed. And
it's in the literature, do they look at space as a warfighting domain?
I think it depends on what you're reading. But. Okay.
Yeah, because it hasn't been that long that we've kind of looked at the domain like this. So, all right, Evans, what about you?
Well, I have a 7-year-old, so I guess if you walked into my house and looked at the TV, it's probably got Bluey or something on Disney Plus. But when my wife and I do have time to watch TV, usually it's like the Chicago series, so Chicago Fire, Chicago Med, Chicago PD.
Are you from Chicago?
No, sir. No.
Just.
I don't even know how it happened. I think we stumbled on it. She did. She found episode 1 one day, started watching it, and just got hooked. So
just got hooked.
And it had like 12 seasons, so we're like, cool, this can occupy us for a good while. So when we have our time to do it, that's what we do.
Have you gone to visit Chicago?
No, sir. Nope.
So, you know, she's
going to. I don't even want to.
You know, she's going to make you go like on the tour, where they remember this in episode 4, season 6. This was the house that was on fire.
Yeah, maybe.
All right, Granger, what about you?
All right. So, are you familiar with like the Food Network?
Yeah.
All right. So, every March during March Madness, they have something called Tournament of Champions on Food Network.
Yeah.
And they have, I think, 32 different chefs. Face off against each other 1v1 bracket style until they get to like who's the champion of the tournament. It's hosted by Guy Fieri. It's pretty fun. So me and my wife usually watch that during March.
Are you a cook?
I dabble.
Yeah. It amazed my wife, you know, we like the British baking show, so we like to watch that too. But it is amazing, you know, how long it takes me to boil water and these people like the stuff that they make in such a short amount of time. I'm like, this has got to be fake. Like, there's no way. But it's cool to watch that.
So the Tournament Champions is kind of similar to that. So they have a wheel that they spin. So they spin a wheel for their protein. They have to use like a gadget. They have a different type of cuisine they have to cook, and they have a time limit. And it's all randomized. So it's really interesting to see how people adapt to.
So by spinning of a wheel.
Yeah. They like literally spin it like Wheel of Fortune.
That's right. You know, I think, hey, take a note. We're going to try the next TMB for NASA Sergeants. That's what we're going to try. We're going to spin a wheel. We Well, no, we're using darts.
Yeah, I was going to say a giant dartboard.
Using darts. We're not using to spin the wheel, but I think that's probably safer for us to do that. All right, Senor, what about you guys?
All right, so most of our time is spent watching our kids swim. That's our part-time job. About 20 something hours a week, but I would say probably murder shows on Netflix. True crime. I'm a big fan. Don't put me on a list.
Okay. Note. Continuous evaluation. Let's look at Fields. But they're all like actual true stories.
Yes. So I can fall asleep to that kind of stuff, but like watching horror films will keep me awake. I don't like that.
So fiction keeps you
awake.
I don't
like those,
But true crimes, you can fall asleep.
Yes. I usually have a true crime podcast in my ear as I fall asleep. That's
terrifying. Yeah, that is. All right. So anyone who's going to the Vassar Fellowship, be careful.
Rory's fine. Don't worry about
it. What about you, sir?
This is a weird group. I don't really watch TVs or movies either, but it is really nice. Like, I never really grew up watching. I grew up watching sports. But when I'm on crew, the spark in people's eyes, like, you see, like, oh, you never watched Top Gun? Like, they're more excited than me. Or, like, they're like, what was the show that we watched? Game of Thrones?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. God. everybody's eye just sparked. They're like, hey, like, sir, like, you know, when we have some downtime, like, trust me, like, you go home and you watch this and tell me what it's about. And I was like, what? Like, I'm getting quizzed on this? Like,
just stop before the last season.
Yeah. What about you, Chief? What's on your guys' TV?
Kathy monopolizes the TV, so I watch whatever she does. So it is a lot of Housewives, Below Deck, Love is Blind, The Circle. Yes. Yes. That is a lot of stuff that we watch. Yeah. I try to, you know, so there's a couple of things we try to do something together. So Murders in the Building, is really good with Selena Gomez, I think is in that one. So when the season comes out, we'll do that together, you know, as opposed to like the other shows is on in the background when I'm in the house, you know, trying to catch up on TMT Taskers that sort of battles with Chief Sheffield are yelling at me that I haven't answered yet. But I'm a Star Wars fan. So I've been trying to Skeleton Crew. I still haven't made it through the season. I'm trying to do that. But if it's a show like I really want to watch, I get really annoyed because I watch it with Kathy, but she's like multitasking. She's like on social media. She's on her iPad. And then she'll say, what happened? Who's that? I'm like, all right, we got to rewind it because I'm not going to explain it. So I haven't made it through the season yet. But the reason I ask, right, you know, because we all work really hard, right? The work we do is serious. You know, and people say work-life balance. I don't know if balance for me personally is the right phrase to use, but I like harmony. Like, what is it that we do in our lives, right, when we're not focused on war fighting? It's important that we have other things that we spend time doing, whether it be working on cars, you know, or just hanging out with family, or watching kid shows, you know, or being quizzed on Game of Thrones. Or planning a murder, like all these things. But it's kind of important, right? But it also, we're all people, right? We're all humans. And I think, you know, as we do the serious work that we do, I think it's important when we're connecting with the teammates that we show a little bit of who we are beyond the uniform. Because I think that's important, especially as leaders. Because you want to make sure that we're, you know, inspiring the next generation and let them know that it's really important you work to kind of get that harmony going as you work through that. But it is kind of interesting. I thought it'd be a lot more TV watchers out there. But thanks for sharing. I appreciate it. I'm sure there's people listening right now like, oh my God. This group is crazy.
I think the comment section blew up when Captain Bach admitted he didn't know what Game of Thrones was. Yeah. So,
yeah. Well, I was trying not to judge, you know, on that. But yeah, but you know, so the other thing too, social media. Like, I'm not really the team helps me on the official pages that I have, and I have some personal, like, I have my own personal Facebook. But I don't post a lot other than my Peloton rides. But man, like if I look at something and I'm looking at my phone and I'll look up and like 45 minutes has gone by and I'm like, oh my God, like what just happened? I get sucked right into that. So that's why it's dangerous for me. So I guess maybe I have an addictive, you know, personality or something. I don't know. Like, but I just gotta make sure that I do that. But hey, I really appreciate spending some time with you today. You know, I think that, you know, getting a chance to talk and just kind of work through some things, the feedback that you give me personally is really helpful. In general, Salsam and I really value because what you have to say, because you are really the ones doing the work. You know, he talked about this in his speech, right? Hey, you know, the Pentagon's not going to solve all the problems. It's going to be you. But, you know, our job is to make sure that we are breaking down any kind of, right, roadblocks, giving you try to fight for the resources that you all need to do the amazing things that you do, and create the policies that are flexible enough that empower you to get after it. You don't need me or anyone else in the Pentagon, you know, micromanaging every single thing that you do, because we need to unleash you to get after some of the hard problems that we talked about today. but also allow you to lead, right? Allow you to develop into the individuals that maybe someday will replace us in a Pentagon. And I'm just so excited because there's so much talent that we have in the service. And because we're so small, I can say, right, that I get a chance to see almost all of it, which is one of the benefits, right, that we have. So again, hey, thanks for coming out. I know we got some more things you're going to do tomorrow here at AFA, but I really appreciate all of you. You do represent an image, right? You are a great representation of the values and what it means to be a guardian of the United States Space Force. And I appreciate you spending some time with us. I wish you the best of luck. So we're going to sign off. This is the end. I don't know when the next podcast is going to be. I do it whenever my public affairs tell me that we're going to do one. But thanks for listening. And if you have any feedback, send it to public affairs and they will get it to me. So, all right. So from Denver, which we didn't get a whole lot of snow yesterday, but it was a little chilly, we're going to sign off. So we're out.